and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we...
Continue following
UMNO's Multi-Expel Party President Hopeful Kari Jamaluddin and UMNO's Supreme Council Member Tan Sri Noor Omar, not to mention the suspension of other party heavyweights, including Datuk Sri Hisham Bin Hussein and Sharil Hamdan. Now, those punished were accused of breaching party discipline. Although critics have accused UMNO President Zaid Hamidi of weeding out rivals and dissidents. Now, will this finally be the end of UMNO's years-long internal conflict and factionalism as claimed by party leaders? Let's speak now to political analyst Dr. Bridget Wells. She's an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia's Asia Research Institute. Bridget, so much to unpack tonight. Let's look at the consequences of this purge. I mean, we start with UMNO's internal dynamics. No secret that there have been deep factionalism in the party for a long time, and that was made far more apparent during GE15 as well as the immediate aftermath of the elections. Now, has Zaid Hamidi's move consolidated his power, strengthened his grip on the party, or might this backfire on UMNO?
So there are two arenas here. One is the party elections, and then the other is for the public. I think that even the Supreme Council was divided. The majority were divided against Zahid's decision to go about this in the way that he did. And I think we can see that this will have repercussions in terms of challengers within the system, maybe not at the key positions, but it will play out at the contest within the party. And of course, the party's divisions won't heal through a process of expulsion or suspending people. This is not something that actually brings the party together. It, in fact, basically makes the wounds and the scars deeper. In terms of the impact on the public, I think this is going to be very difficult because UMNO faces an issue of trying to rebuild its reputation after the election, and it's going into an election in the next 6 months. It is some of the suspensions and sack
for
this
party, particularly in places such as Selangor and Negeri Sembilan.
Tail end.
I'm going to go back to what you talked about the divisions within the party, that this in fact deepens the wounds. Can we talk a little bit about those who have been suspended as opposed to and also expelled? The purge, how has that gone down with the grassroots? Because those displaced leaders, they commanded quite a bit of influence within the party. Now there's a void. So will that support transfer to current leadership or even future leadership?
It depends on the state. Some of the places, do have these very serious issues. In places like Johor, where I think the sacking and the suspensions and the change in leadership in the state will have ripples across the state. And Johor is pivotal for the party's strength. It's one of the places that is strongest. I think we will see,
however, that many of the people in the party may choose just to wait and see how this plays out, particularly in terms of how it plays out with the elections. I also expect that in terms of the grassroots, that you will see and have already started to see quiet exodus from the different divisions, a less active role in the party. And this will happen particularly in places, especially among younger members who have felt the most from this particular purge, because many of the young leaders have challenged and the party has left itself a leadership vacuum, especially among younger leaders, which I think will have very significant implications down the line.
Hishamuddin Hussein being suspended for 6 years, how do you see that impacting his faction, his support within the party, as opposed to, say, Kari Jamaluddin's sacking, being completely sacked from the party and the support that Kari commanded?
Well, Kyrie doesn't have that strong a grassroots. Some of his grassroots are among younger members. I think what he was able to do is galvanize the public and also some of the more reformist, more progressive elements in the party. Those parts of the party have suffered for many decades now. But I think there was a recognition among those groups that trying to fight inside. I think the sense of being able to fight inside is actually has diminished. I think Kyrie himself spoke out about this morning. Where he said that, you know, that there really is not an opportunity for reform in the party itself. But I think in terms of Hisham Udin, this is going to be very significant from the perspective, as I mentioned earlier, about Johor politics. And Hisham Udin has his supporters, his base. And of course, you know, he held a very important position. And by suspending him, they've left him in the party. And they've trapped him in the party in this context. And I think that this is something that is going to be very uncomfortable for the party itself, but also for the dynamics on the ground, because I think it will perpetuate this purge. Because every time Hisham Udin is in parliament, it will remind the fact that he's been locked into the suspension cage.
Speaking about parliament and the fact that now UMNO is working with the coalition government, will the sackings and the suspension, how might that impact Anwar Ibrahim's coalition government?
Well, I think the first and most important place to look where the impact will be in the state elections. And I think that there are a number of states that I've mentioned that I think this will be very important from the perspective of UMNO's future, the 10 seats in Terengganu, the seats in Kelantan, the two seats in Kedah. All of these now are very much at risk. They only have 5 seats in Selangor and the seats in Negeri Sembilan, 15. Many of these are challenged in very different ways now than they were before. So the party really has a potential risk of eroding its political base. That will have an impact on the Negeri Sembilan and Selangor government in terms of the ability to have across the different party lines. Number two, I think that the sacking and the way the purge took place does not reflect well on the unity government from a perspective of democratic processes, from a perspective of a larger kind of sense of due process. These are things that do not that reinforce the kind of vulnerability, because what is shown here is that Zahid looks like he's insecure. I mean, and he clearly is insecure if he has to do a purge. But as a result, this also creates insecurity by spillover effect on Anwar Ibrahim's government. I think also, you know, there is a particular dynamic that's happening in Barisan Nasional, which is that the other parties, MIC and MCA, are also somewhat unhappy to be kind of what I call the step parties in the Anwar government relationship. And I think they're also going to be placed under further strain, because a weaker UMNO means that they're even weakened by extension.
You talked a little bit about Zahid Hamidi being insecure and the reasons for this purge. In your recent opinion piece, you wrote that this is bullying behavior, that he seemed to be a bully. How might this translate to voter support? Already, UMNO, the weakest performance in a general election ever. Might this alienate even more support for the party instead of strengthening Zahid Hamidi's leadership of the party?
I think it has the very likelihood of that happening, especially if this continues to percolate. I think those in UMNO feel that it was necessary, some of them feel that it was necessary to do this early, as far away from the state elections as possible. And they make the argument this will allow the party to heal. You know, I think that they're overly optimistic in that particular perspective. I think that what happened in this purge is that it reinforced the same factors that affected Zahid's performance in UMNO Obama's performance in the election, is that you go about things in particular bully ways, and this is the image that resonates among people in the public. It's a, you know, the time where AMNO could feel that he could do these things without having repercussions, with people looking at it with a bit of, you know, with a different sort of more critical lenses. That is past. It is a time of where they have to have a bit more of a reckoning in that context. And I think that you know, the fact that those have been sacked and in particular have been able to come out into the media and speak about these issues speaks for the different time that Malaysia is at compared to the past.
So is he untouchable still? I mean, within the party, you pointed out that the decision was split in the beginning, but he went ahead and went ahead with the purge. Does that mean that Zahid Hamidi is untouchable within the party?
Well, I think that for now, it looks like he controls all the levers. This is one of the challenges of AMNO and many other political parties in Malaysia, that there's too much centralization of power among the presidency. But I do think that history and AMNO has shown that no leader in their party is truly untouchable.
Okay, you also pointed out that leaders, you know, former prime ministers have been sacked from their party. You pointed to Dr. Mahathir, you pointed to Muhyiddin Yassin, you pointed to Anwar Ibrahim as well, formerly sacked by AMNO, gone on to become prime minister. What do you expect the options are for those who have been sacked from the party? What options are available to them now?
Well, I think we've seen Omar, for example, come out today and say that he feels divorced, but he's looking potentially to remarry. I think you're seeing many different options on the table from the perspective of whether or not they'll participate in the state elections or they will participate down the line. I think, you know, defeat in political defeat and suspension and sacking in Malaysia is nowhere near the end of people's political careers. I think we're going to see the fact, ironically, I feel that these individuals who have been sacked, especially those who have been sacked compared to those who have been suspended, have been strengthened. I think the people who have been suspended have been put in a much more difficult position because they have less options ahead.
The options on the table, might that mean PKR or other political parties?
Well, I think, I'm sure there will be lots of outreach and conversations in the next period of time to discuss these issues. We're going into a very long parliament session, one of the longest in many years, in a few weeks. And so I expect there'll be continued conversations. But I also think it's not just PKR and Pakatan Harapan parties that they'll be looking at. I think one has to recognize that they'll be courted as much from Bersatu and PAS as well.
What are the what's the likelihood, Bridget, of Khairi maybe setting up a new party? Is there space in the crowded political landscape for a new party?
We've seen in the last history of the last 3 years in Malaysia, the emergence of new parties. New parties, ironically, have become a product of the anti-hopping law because it gives the people in those smaller parties more power. But at the same time, they're much weaker players in the coalition politics has taken place. So I think that, you know, what to set up a new party, you have to have a clear identity and have resources. My sense is that a new party may be a much more difficult challenge to set up in the short term, especially given the fragmented system that exists right now.
Bridget, thank you so much for speaking with me. I appreciate your time. Dr. Bridget Welsh there from the Asia Research Institute at University of Nottingham, Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This. We will be right back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about AMNO's move to expel and suspend leaders who are seen to be potential rivals or dissidents of UMNO President Zaid Hamidi. What might be the consequences or repercussions of displacing these party heavyweights? Joining me on the show now is Arina Najwa Ahmad Said. She's director at the political research consultancy Bauer Group Asia. Arina, thank you so much for joining me on the show. How are you making sense of this purge? I mean, what's the narrative that makes the most sense to you? Is it the mass cleaning of the party? Is it getting rid of those who contravened party discipline? Is it getting rid of rivals and dissidents? How are you reading the situation?
Yeah, thanks so much, Manisha. I think firstly, it's definitely a consolidation of power, making sure that those who are heavyweights within the party are towing the line similar to what the leadership has towed. I think if we see, look at UMNO's leadership, typically it has been quite hierarchical. So you do follow what the leader says. However, I think over time, there's been a sort of evolution or continuation of, unhappiness within the party. I think slowly the party has seen a sort of trust deficit with regards to how Zahid Hamidi was appointed with and deputy prime minister and the partnerships with this current unity government and now the sacking of this political heavyweight. So I think it's causing a lot of distrust amongst the grassroots, but it's definitely a way for the party leadership, especially Zahid Hamidi, to control the narrative and control his position as deputy prime minister.
Well, purging people who are seen to be your rivals may not be the best way to overcome a trust deficit within your party. Has the party become weaker, in your opinion, Arina?
Yes, for sure. I think, ever since, and I think the peak of it was during, 1MDB, when Ajit's case was, came to the fore, and people were already questioning, especially the Malays and UMNO grassroots, really whether or not UMNO, they stand with UMNO. And these, grassroots and these party members have slowly, being seen to be shifted. That's why you've seen them go to Bersatu, sometimes you've seen them go to Perjuang. And now, like I said, that trust deficit is still continuing. And now, there's a question of whether or not coming into state elections, will UMNO work together with, its coalition members?
On that note of the state elections, how might the sackings and the suspensions and maybe this growing trust deficit from within the party as well from outside the party, how might that be played out in the arena of state elections?
Yeah, I think there's two parts. One, obviously, we're looking at the Malay vote. I think the Malay votes now are being pushed closer to the fence. They're questioning whether or not this is the UMNO that they want to support, or is there an alternative that they can support, especially when we look at the surge of, prominence or popularity that Perikatan Nasional gained during the election. People could be questioning whether or not this is a viable alternative. So we're looking at the voters on one, especially UMNO voters, whether or not they would swing, so reducing the number of votes for UMNO in the state election. So that's one. Number two, in terms of grassroots support. So we already see that, a lot of people, and if you look at the postings even for Zahid on Instagram and social media, a lot of supporters are very unhappy. So you need to get their grassroots support and their support to go, and that's your machinery for the state election. So if your own people are not willing to go and help you campaign, go down to the ground, then it's quite likely that some of these states will swing to Perikatan Nasional.
Well, that's quite interesting. Okay, so Pakatan Harapan now in a coalition government with UMNO, but UMNO has been weakened by this move of a purge. How might Anwar Ibrahim's coalition government or even Pakatan Harapan be impacted in the state elections if you have a partner who is significantly weaker, who is distrusted by its traditional Malay voter base? Will that also weaken you as a party, as someone who's cooperating with this party?
For sure, I think there's so many ways that this can go. So one, obviously, we can see maybe some people pulling out. And we know that Hishamuddin has been suspended, but the question of whether or not he's willing to go, a step ahead and just, resign and then trigger a by-election, that's also still being questioned. So I think now it's really looking at what's the straw that will break the camel's back. So that's one part with regards to UMNO's part within the larger coalition. The second is then the Pakatan Harapan coalition needs to work stronger with, building alliances with other coalitions as well. So I think this is where the relationship with Borneo, I think, will be strengthened, and Borneo's leverage here will be a lot higher. Because even if in the instance that UMNO does, you know, split and they do drop out of the coalition, at least you can still have a slim majority. But that's how definitely it will impact, the current government. And of course, when you're looking at, you know, larger states like Selangor, this is a state with a lot of resources. And, you know, if you don't have, a coalition or a party, your own party, or someone within your coalition leading that, then that's going to be a cause of tension. So I think it can go a different way, but it's definitely something to look out for. And I know the Prime Minister would probably need to look at ways to consolidate his power now.
Well, okay, so what I'm hearing is that there's still a lot of pain ahead for UMNO before things can get better. What do you think might help that, help the party to recover lost ground, given all the tumultuous events that have happened for the party in the past few months?
Yeah, I think firstly, to address that trust deficit, I think there hasn't been a sort of recalibration, if you will. I think, you know, when it comes to work post-pandemic, everyone found a new way of working, right? A new norm. And I think in politics hasn't adjusted to that. UMNO is no longer the dominant party anymore. Politics in a post-pandemic is very different now. So how then do you govern, as a smaller party within a coalition? So I think there needs to be that recalibration and what UMNO stands. And also then rebuilding that trust with its people. So I think that will take some time, because that will also definitely attract different kinds of people into the party. You know, you want to ensure that the kinds of people you attract in the party are people who want to serve and not just people who are looking for posts. So it's definitely not a one solution. There's definitely not one solution, but there needs to be a real soul-searching effort for UMNO to recalibrate this.
Okay, can I ask you, Arina? So during GE15, Khairy had, you know, put it all out there, put all his cards on the table, said he eventually wanted to be Prime Minister of Malaysia. Maybe that was part of the narrative going into the elections, also part of the narrative going into the party polls for UMNO. But he argued that this is the way politics ought to be, that there should be a clear expression of political ambition, of succession planning. But he's put a giant bullseye on his back. Do you think that this is the end of that type of transparent political ambition, that Khairy will become the cautionary tale and now all politicians will be quite underhand about where they want to see or about political succession within political parties?
Yeah, actually, no, I think it will be the reverse. I think now, because we see, number one, so many people or political parties, I mean, politicians jumping to different parties, because now it is so saturated, the level playing field is there's actually a better level playing field right now because of the fact that we have a hung parliament. It's become a lot more democratic than it was before. So it's not a surprise that people will throw their hat into the ring. So I don't think that would be a cautionary tale. I think it is expected. And when you have so many parties and so many voices, you need to, you know, show that you are interested. But I think, you know, the fact that KJ did that, you know, throughout elections was already a sign of what was to come. And, you know, it's shown today. There was already probably signs that, you know, Zahid was trying to control the party, control its people and control, you know, the voices within it. So this, which is why KJ voiced it out. So I think it's interesting to see what's going to happen later on. I think people will become a lot more vocal.
Do you think that this is the end of his political career, or he might still have a future ahead of him?
No, he definitely, I think, has a future for himself. And I think he's in an interesting position because he's deemed as one of the progressives within UMNO. And I think that's very appealing to not just, you know, voters, but also to, you know, corporations, to the business sector, to the diplomatic sector as well. But he definitely has some longevity. I think it's a question of whether or not he wants to maintain that momentum or has that interest to continue with it. So if he does, then I think he will do quite well.
Okay, well, we'll have to wait and see. Arina, thank you so much for joining me on the show tonight. Political analyst Arina Najwa Ahmad Said there, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off.
And good night.
We'll be right back.